Hey, how's it going, everyone? This is Randall D. Stroud, and today we're going to talk about the myth of casual sex. And what do I mean by casual sex? Well, let's break down the word, the etymology. I mean, what does the word casual mean? I mean, in common usage, we look at the word casual as being something that we do leisurely or something that we do with little thought or little regard of one's safety or future predicament. There are lots of things that I do casually. You know, I go for a walk casually around the neighborhood, you know, with little care or regard for my safety, because I live in a pretty safe area relatively, and it's something that doesn't cost any money to go for a casual walk. What are some other things that we do that's casual? Well, at work, you may have casual Friday where you don't have to wear a business suit and you can just come with jeans and a t-shirt. It's casual, it's free, it's comfortable. But this notion of having casual sex, what is casual about taking your reproductive organs and connecting it to someone else's reproductive organs? Never have I gone up to someone and just casually said, "Hey, do you want to, you know, connect our bodies together and become one flesh?" According to biblical verses, that's what sex is. It's two flesh become one. And whenever you have sex with someone, what's happening in the body? Well, your brain releases a cocktail of hormones, namely dopamine and oxytocin. Dopamine is the pleasure hormone. It is what makes you feel, you know, happy and euphoric and almost like a drunk feeling where you feel as if everything around you is heightened and brightened. Your pain receptors are lower. Everything just feels more clear. And oxytocin is the hormone that facilitates attachment, saying that, oh, this thing belongs to me, or I want to be near this thing more often. You know, whenever a child is being held by its mother, the oxytocin levels in both people rise to astronomically high levels. And oxytocin lowers blood pressure. Again, it lowers anxiety and pain receptors. It brings a sense of calmness and safety. And these are all good things. And the more you have sex with someone, the more that those hormones are triggered and the more that your brain chemistry and your spirit adopt itself to this activity with this particular person. It's almost like two radio frequencies adjusting to one another. That's what sex is. And when you do it with the right person, it is absolutely a very beautiful and harmonious thing. Think of like an orchestra, for example. Whenever an orchestra is playing music, if one of the instruments is just slightly out of tune, you'll notice that something just feels off about the sound. But if all of the instruments are playing in perfect synchronicity and the tuning is perfect, everyone's playing in the same key, then it's beautiful. You have this tingling feeling on your skin that, wow, this is an amazing, epic song. And that's what sex is when you do it with the right person, especially within the confines of marriage, because you feel safe, and you're supposed to, because sex is an act that naturally leads to procreation of children. And children, mind you, children are taken care of by the mother and father. I mean, it's common sense. I shouldn't have to say this, but in today's society where you have all these children that are born out of hedonism, there are consequences to this so-called casual sex. First and foremost, people's hearts are being ripped to shreds. So, for example, casual sex works like this. Imagine that there's a man in the desert, right? And he's thirsty, and he sees a lake of water. And he runs towards it, only to find out that it was a mirage, it was an image. And then he looks over to his left, and he sees another body of water. But this time he doesn't trust it, because he's like, well, the last one was a mirage. I'm not going to go over there. That's what happens to people who engage in frequent casual sex, is they get into this cycle of falling in love with people and then being ghosted or being dumped and ignored or whatever happens to cause it to fall apart. And they lose their ability to pair bond. They lose their ability to connect with someone in a manner that is productive and secure. And this leads to all kinds of attachment issues and abandonment issues. And we wonder why we live in this love-phobic society, because these sort of behaviors used to be shunned in the past. You know, people were called whores or adulterers or all these kind of things. And maybe sometimes it was taken too far, because I do think that, you know, not everyone who engages in premarital sex is a, you know, a messed up person, or anyone who gets a divorce is, you know, a horrible person. That's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying at all. But what I am saying is that whether you have sex before marriage or you wait, it's better to wait because you have this commitment that is backing your decision up to have sex, which is a very intimate thing to do. And if you are going to have sex before marriage, before you engage in that, at the very least, make sure that you feel as if you have this real commitment and you have this real hope of a future in this thing, because to give yourself into sexual behavior is a very vulnerable activity and behavior to do. So, you know, it's really surprising that I have to even say all this, because it's common sense, but this is the culture that we're in. I mean, we have all these dating apps that specifically encourage this kind of behavior, you know, these so-called hookup apps. And there are a lot of contributing factors to this. First and foremost, the culture of the 1960s. A lot of the problems that we have now stem back from that free love era of, yeah, free love, casual sex, you know, let's all do drugs and be hippies. A lot of it comes from that. But this goes back to biblical days of King Herod, Pontius Pilate, Rome. When people say Western culture, what they're speaking of primarily is Rome, Roman culture. The Romans have always been engaged in hedonism and sexual debauchery, and their lifestyle has extended throughout the centuries. But because of social media and our ability to create these totem poles, that's what I call social media. I call them personal totem poles, you know, where we create these things to worship ourselves. You know, people have thousands of selfies all over their Instagram and Facebook and all these kind of things. And yeah, they very much are like totem poles where people worship themselves. People would rather do something that gives them 10,000 followers than 10,000 actual dollars. You know, it's almost like we have social credit in addition to financial credit. You know, I've gone out on dates with girls and I've had them ask me before, you know, how many followers do you have on Instagram? How many Twitter followers do you have? I'm like, does this even matter? You know, and I call this social credit. And there's been times there's been times where I've gone out on a date with a young lady and she Googles my name and then suddenly she's interested. Like, oh, okay, this guy has some achievements or he's known. And I've seen it happen to other people. Like, I have a friend, he's got like around 60,000 Instagram followers. He's a professional fighter. I'm not going to say his name. But, you know, we were hanging out one time and this girl didn't really seem too interested in him. But as soon as they exchanged Instagrams and she saw how many followers he had, she was suddenly all into him. She was all over him. She like grabbed his arm and wanted to walk everywhere with him and be seen. She started taking all these selfies. That's the world that we live in. And yes, this kind of behavior has always existed. I mean, people love winners. People love to hang around other popular people. People like to date people with money. Being shallow is not something new, but what is new is our ability to magnify this narcissism to a level that has never been seen before because of technology. I mean, there are people who spend money on fake Twitter followers. Yeah, this is a real thing. That there are people who spend money and buy social media followers just so that they can look more popular or famous than what they really are. And then, of course, you have these filters that people put on their selfies, on their photos, to hide wrinkles and all these kind of things. So we're living in a society that is so self-absorbed, but also emotionally traumatized. Because after the 1960s, divorce rates began to skyrocket. And for the last two generations, we have been living in what I call a pandemic of fatherless homes. We don't have two-parent homes that much anymore. One in four children grow up without both parents being in the household on a regular basis. I mean, 70% of felons report to not having a relationship with their father or having a strained relationship with their father. There is a correlation, and we're not looking at this. We are not looking at these correlations. So all of the debauchery, the casual sex, how easy it is to get divorced. I mean, you know, 40, 50 years ago, if you wanted to get a divorce, you had to go to a judge and you had to go to all these, marriage counseling classes, and you had to earn your way out of the divorce. But nowadays, you can just go to a judge and say, hey, here's $500. I don't love this person anymore. I want out. And then suddenly that person's entitled to half of your money and all these kind of things, so, you know, and then child support and food stamps. So the government does incentivize this kind of behavior because it's like, hey, you know, you can break up your family. We'll take care of you. The government is the new daddy. It's the new father. Now, that's not to say that I know that divorce laws were stricter before, and there was, you know, before women were allowed to work, there were a lot of women who were in abusive relationships and they couldn't escape because they were financially dependent. And now that we have, you know, mom and dad working, you know, women are working, they're not just stay-at-home mothers anymore. Women have more financial independence, and I think that's great, but there are some trade-offs that if we don't have, you know, stay-at-home parents, at least for the first couple of years of the child, then you have strangers raising your children. You have daycares and public schools teaching our children everything that we should be teaching. I mean, for millions of years, the woman stayed at home and nurtured the child, and the father went out and hunted and brought back food. And the father also offered protection to the family. This has worked for a long time. It's only in the last, you know, 40 or 50 years that we've done this experiment with, hey, let's get rid of gender roles and treat men and women as exactly the same. And let's make it easy to dissolve marriage and let's encourage casual sex. And the results have been catastrophic, especially for children. You know, men are the yang and women are the yin. Yin and yang. It's a Chinese concept of feminine and masculine energies. And father and mother bring a balance to these energies in their sons and daughters. And there is a radical imbalance. Because most kids are raised by single moms, society has been greatly feminized. Now, I don't necessarily agree with an over, you know, masculinized society, because if women were not in the picture, I think we'd have a lot of psychopaths running around. You know, excessive masculinity is not a good thing, but what we have now is excessive femininity. You know, everyone's so emotional and so triggered, and you have all these boys who are, you know, really confused. There's gender dysphoria. I saw this epic meme that was on Facebook, and it was a picture of a mother and her son who was wearing makeup and a father who was packing his bags. And the caption said that there was a caption above the woman's head, the mother, and she was saying, "I don't want a man." And the daughter had a caption above her head and said, you know, "I hate men." And then the little boy, his caption was, "What does it mean to be a man?" Whenever we're children, boys look to their mother as an example. So whenever I dated my first girlfriend, I compared her to my mother, because my mother is the first woman that I knew, and I compared their qualities. Girls do the same thing with their fathers. You know, if a girl has a really great father in her life, every boy that she dates, she'll compare that man to her father. Like, well, you know, my father didn't treat me this way, or my father was very kind to my mother. Why is my boyfriend treating me bad? I'm going to dump him. And that's the way that it should be. But if you have a non-existent father or a father who abused you, then those kind of women tend to go for these bad boy types because that's all they know. Or they view the good guy or the good girl as false. I see this so many times where people that have problems with commitments, they'll go after the bad boy or the bad girl because the bad boy and the bad girl do not represent commitment. They know deep in their hearts that their relationship isn't going anywhere, and that makes them feel safe because there's no commitment. But then after they start having sex and attachment forms, and then it's sort of like a self-fulfilling prophecy of, why do I keep falling in love with people that hurt me? But I'm not willing to give the good guy or the good girl a chance because their love and commitment towards me is intimidating. And usually the so-called good guy or the good girl, you know, we might say that, oh, they're boring because they don't have tattoos, or they love me so much and they're so loyal because they're addicted to confrontation and drama, because that's all they know and that's what gets them excited, even though it causes them so much stress on the back end. I've seen this play out so many times in other people's lives. It's even played out in my life for a brief season, where we get so used to failing, or we get so used to being around dysfunction, that we fall in love with the dysfunction. And it's only whenever we're able to distance ourselves from that dysfunction and do a lot of introspection, a lot of healing and work on ourselves, that we can look back and realize that was not normal. That was not normal to be in that type of relationship. We can look all throughout the Bible in quotes about guarding your heart. You know, King Solomon said, above all things, guard your heart, for all things come from the heart. If you're out here getting drunk every night and having casual sex, you are polluting your heart and you are opening yourself up for bad energy, bad demons. Every time that you have sex with someone, you're allowing that person's spirit to haunt you. There are many women whose wombs are haunted by the spirits of strange men, and there are many men out here whose loins are also haunted by the spirits of many Jezebels or bad women. And then once they meet a good person, they wouldn't even know how to recognize them, or they would be terrified. To someone who's been abused or who has been in abusive relationships their entire life, a good person, a loving person, is the scariest thing to them. So my advice is, if you are a person that has attachment issues, if you're a person who has addiction issues, don't look for romance or sex to save you. And in actuality, you should avoid it until you heal yourself. Because if you don't, you're just going to hurt a lot of innocent people in the process. Hurt people hurt people. And if you meet a good person and you just have sex with them and you throw them away, or you play this hot and cold game, I like you, but now I'm going to ignore you for 2 or 3 weeks, that's emotional abuse and you're being selfish. Just because you're afraid and you want to protect your emotions doesn't give you the right to cut up someone else's emotions who are healthy. And then in turn, you are traumatizing that person. I've seen this happen so many times. Some beautiful, nice girl or some very nice guy gets with a crazy person, and then they leave the relationship traumatized, and they end up becoming the thing that they hate. There's this famous quote by Friedrich Nietzsche where he says, "Be careful in fighting monsters that one does not become one himself." Or something along those terms. I'm paraphrasing a bit, but it's true. Oftentimes in our pursuit to resist something, we end up becoming that thing that we swore we would never be. It rubs off on us. If you spend enough time in the dirt, your shoes will get dirty. If you spend enough time around abusive people, don't be surprised if you pick up some of their habits. So my prescription to all this is to turn to God, turn to some self-healing, get on your knees, ask for forgiveness, pour your heart out, whether it's to a priest, to God, if you're an atheist, maybe to a therapist, but pour your heart out. Forgive yourself for the mistakes that you've made, and if you have hurt other people, seek those people out and apologize to them, and start making commitments toward yourself that, hey, I'm not going to have sex unless I intend for this to be a long-term relationship, or I'm not going to drink every single day, you know, if you have that kind of problem, or I'm not going to spend, you know, so much money today. I'm going to create a budget. Limitations. That's the beauty of religion and God, is God isn't endless tolerance. Like, oh, God loves me no matter what. Real love is showing what you're not willing to do. Boundaries and restrictions. I love my wife so much that I'm not going to accept phone numbers from other women. I love my husband so much that I'm not going to spend time alone with other men that may lead into something else. So true love isn't just about forgiveness and tolerance, but it's also about boundaries. That's what self-love is about, boundaries. Self-love is not about going out and having casual sex or buying a plane ticket and going across the country or taking a bunch of selfies. Self-love is about self-respect and putting boundaries and saying, hey, I'm not going to tolerate this kind of behavior from others or from myself, because nobody's perfect. We are just as much a contributor to our problems as other people. So guys, I want to wrap this up and just say that if you're someone who has been struggling with rejection or abandonment or commitment, and you've been masking your pain with drugs, alcohol, casual sex, or other unhealthy behaviors, I'm telling you, meet it head on. My advice is to come to God, because God is a very powerful force, a very healing force. And then start making commitments. Start putting boundaries and restrictions upon yourself. And if you do backslide on the rules that you put on yourself, you know, quickly correct it and forgive yourself and move on. Nobody's sinless. Nobody's perfect. But as you get into a habit, you'll find yourself sinning less and less. Reprogram yourself. Create new habits. And then after a while, you'll look back and realize, wow, I'm a better person. It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take some work. You're going to backslide sometimes. But if you're committed to being better, you will be better. Henry Ford, the creator of the automobile, one of my favorite quotes from him was, "Whether you think you can or you cannot, you are right. Whatever you believe to be so will come to fruition." If you say, "Oh, I can't help it, this is just me," then okay, it'll be you. Or if you say to yourself, "I'm going to change. I don't want to be this person anymore. This is the person that I now want to be." Well, guess what? It's going to happen. You're going to speak it into existence, and you're going to meditate, and God's going to carry you along the way. If you follow His laws, if you follow His direction, you can become a better person. I want to end this by saying that you have value. Everyone has value. They have special skills. They have things that make them unique. And you don't have to give away your body unnecessarily to undeserving people to prove that you're worthy of love. Stop abusing yourself. Stop abusing others. And respect yourself. Because it is better to be alone and single, but you have self-respect, than to have a fake admiration from someone who is just using your body for pleasure, which will ultimately end up making you feel worse and have lower self-esteem. So self-love is about self-respect. And if you really want to help yourself, it was the great Confucius who once said, "Those who wish to secure others have secured themselves." So if you're lost in life and you don't know what to do, start doing charity. Start helping other people. Do something nice for your neighbor. And that brings your life value. You say, "Hey, I have purpose because I'm helping people. I'm being selfless." And then suddenly it's not just about your pleasure anymore, but it's about having faith and letting that good faith turn into good works. If you're a good person, or you believe that you are, or that you're making good decisions, those decisions will bear fruit, which will produce positive things for you. But look around in your life. If your life is a mess, then perhaps these beliefs that you hold are not true, and you need to look in the mirror. Getting your life together requires a level of truthfulness with yourself that is highly uncomfortable. If you're overweight, stop saying you're big boned. Say, "I'm fat." If you're drinking every single day, stop saying, "Oh, you know, I'm a moderate drinker." No, you're an alcoholic. If you hate your job, say it. It's only when you recognize the problem that you can start building a plan to fix the problem. Be honest with yourself. Stop running away from your problems with alcohol and casual sex, because they're just distractions. And as much as a distraction sometimes feels good, ultimately it's equal to ignoring a train that is heading towards you. Ignore the problem all you want, but it's still going to hit you. So this has been Randall Stroud with Nalini Global. If you guys need to talk, reach out to me anytime you want at NileniGlobalConsulting@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you, and I would love to mentor you. If you want to be mentored, let's talk about it and set something up. God bless you guys. Take care. Be safe. And like King Solomon said, protect your heart, for all things flow from it. Thank you.